Well, welcome back to SEN Afternoons. We're going to round out the show by heading over to the US. Plenty going on in this early part of the NBA season, on and off the court, as COVID still lingers. Let's chat to Phil Murphy from ESPN in beautiful Connecticut there on the East Coast. Phil, great to have you on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Brett.
Let's start with the Brooklyn Nets. They're certainly in the news. Kyrie Irving, we've taken a great interest, obviously, in this story. He's spoken out publicly for the first time this morning since his two-week absence, Phil. He cited a lot of family and personal stuff going on. I mean, many have criticised him, while many have also, you know, stood up for his decision to take time off. Which side do you take on this, Phil, with the whole Kyrie Irving situation?
Yeah, it's complex, which is appropriate because Kyrie is a complex person. He's highly intelligent. He's somebody who challenges the norms. You know, he's spoken out about, you know, everything down to whether or not the earth is round. He's been criticized as being a flat earther. But with this situation in particular, it was assumed that he was taking time away as a form of, I guess, tacit protest of a ruling of a police brutality case here in the United States, where one of the issues during the northern summer, when we had a person of color who was shot by a police officer,
yep.
The police officer was not charged. The local government in the Milwaukee area did an investigation, did not charge the police officer. Shortly thereafter, we heard Kyrie was taking a leave of absence. And he was somebody who, during the NBA bubble, had said, hey, during one of those issues that arose, that he doesn't think the NBA players should go back. He's one of the voices in the room of dissension that said, maybe we shouldn't resume this season and we should all focus on social justice issues. So there was some support for Kyrie using his platform there, sitting out a couple games. He also said to get himself emotionally right, that it had devastated him. But then days later, a photo or video emerges of him at his sister's 30th birthday. You can see her initials in the background, yeah. Roman numerals 30,
yep.
At a restaurant. He has no mask on. He's taking photos. He's dancing. He's drinking. Totally flaunting the NBA's COVID protocol. So that's why his absence was then extended from a personal absence to now COVID safety. And now it's a matter of conditioning. So as it stands, he will return for tomorrow's game in Cleveland, of all places. It's where he made the biggest shot of his career, won his title in 2016 with Matthew Dellavedova and, of course, LeBron James.
Yep.
So he'll be back. The spotlight will be on he, Harden, and Kevin Durant. And I think fans in Brooklyn will be A-OK if the three of them perform as expected.
How has this gone down with his teammates? I mean, we'll get to James Harden in just a moment, but the whole situation, how has it sort of gone down with his teammates?
Well, so far, anybody who's spoken publicly has said the right things. They've said they support Kyrie. They'll let him speak for himself. Sean Marks, the general manager, somebody who has ties to New Zealand, he said, you know, hey, Kyrie's his own man. You know, we'll focus on the COVID breaches internally, but as far as his rationale for his absence, we'll let him speak for himself, which he did hours ago for the first time. And most importantly for the Nets, they seem to have gelled as so far as welcoming James Harden into the fold with Kevin Durant. The two of them have clicked amazingly. So for me, that's going to be that has overshadowed Kyrie's absence, the fact that the Nets are starting to look like one of the contenders in the East.
Yeah, well, certainly the big picture of Brooklyn looks good. I mean, you mentioned James Harden, the bid coming in. I mean, making some history in just his second Nets game. There's some nice chemistry from an early glimpse that we've got with he and Kevin Durant, the first teammates to score both 30-plus points in their first two games together with the franchise, making that a combined total of 138 points. I think they come second in a duo's first two games of the franchise. We've got to go all the way back to the great Wilt Chamberlain, who was involved in a huge total. Just tell us how you're viewing that chemistry out on the court in the early stanza of their partnership with Kyrie Irving to sort of join the fold.
Yeah, with when you go back to that Wilt Chamberlain statistic that you mentioned, Wilt had accounted for 95% of those points. It's just they picked the second leading scorer, a guy who had combined for 12 points in Wilt's first two games, I believe in the early 60s. But that's going to be the issue for this team and the Nets going forward. It's fine when you have two ball-first perimeter scorers like Kevin Durant and James Harden. They have gelled brilliantly. They played together in the past. They know each other well. They've matured as players. Things are great. You bring Kyrie Irving into the fold, now there might be an issue with sharing the basketball. We saw that a little bit with Harden and Russell Westbrook together in Houston at times, not knowing who should defer. This is another piece to the mix. And as enigmatic as Kyrie is, James Harden and Kevin Durant aren't all that far from that. You have that issue, plus the fact that this team, before they got James Harden, did not defend well. They were a poor defensive team with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. Now you throw in James Harden, who has largely been a defensive liability. The issue for the Nets isn't going to be scoring the basketball. They're going to put up 130 points at will. It's do they give up 135? And that's where they're going to be. It's going to be compelling all year, especially in the playoffs. No matter where they're seated, they're going to be a tall task for any of the Eastern Conference favorites. It is, for me, the most intriguing story in the NBA this year.
It's fascinating, isn't it, Phil? I mean, some of the toughest coaching jobs in sport can be to manage a team where you've got some out-and-out stars and trying to get them to all blend and share and combine well to get the most important result, and that's, you know, a win every time you go out there. I mean, obviously it's tough coaching lower teams who've got less talent, but trying to get all that right as a coach and get the connection right is probably a bigger challenge in some ways.
Well, and if you saw any of the last dance doco featured the Bulls, you saw Phil Jackson, the Zen master.
Yep.
And listen, if I were a coach, I would love to have Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, and then move that to Shaq and Kobe. But those are a lot of egos to manage.
Yeah.
And he did it to the tune of 6 rings in Chicago, another hand's worth of rings for Los Angeles. So it does take a special coach to do it. And Steve Nash, in his first year, he's a player's coach because he could probably still suit up and contribute. But can he manage all of those egos? It is a melting pot, and I think they're going to have some high highs and low lows. It's just, do they put it together at the right time in May when they're playing basketball of consequence?
So how far can you see this Brooklyn Nets side going? I mean, it's such a, you know, an early part of the season, but what's the ceiling?
Well, if I were plugging in a video game system, you know, NBA 2K, they would win the title because they have the best trio of talent in the NBA. But as far as team chemistry goes and any issues there, I could see them feasibly winning the East and falling to the Lakers in the finals. I would be surprised if they won. If they do win this year, you can go ahead and pencil them in next year. I think next year might be their year after they have a year of basketball under their belt. But it is going to be a tough road through the East. The Sixers look like they're playing solid ball. The Celtics are always a difficult team in the playoffs. And it feels like the Bucks, although they lost to the Nets yesterday, it does feel like the Bucks are able to take that next step of the franchise. Those are my four teams coming to that I would say are the likeliest to come out of the East. I would lean toward the Nets only just because at the end of the day, talent matters. It's hard to overcome that the talent that they do have.
We're talking to Phil Murphy from ESPN over in the US, all things NBA here on Afternoons. An Aussie who's breaking some records, Patty Mills, one of our favourites, Phil. He's passed Manu Ginobili's record for the most three-pointers made off the bench with one team in NBA history. He's a triple in that final quarter against Portland, putting him top of the tile. 930 three-pointers made. I mean, there's no one that dislikes Patty Mills, is there?
I don't believe so. You know, the pride of Canberra, he's averaging a career high in points. And it's funny that the Spurs last year missing in the playoffs for the first time in 2 decades, Patty sticks around in his early 30s now, I believe 32, 33 years old. He's somebody who, this is when father time starts to catch up with backcourt players, guys who rely on speed and quickness. But he's showing some veteran savvy. And, he's an inspiration for a young club, a club in the Spurs that they are rebuilding. They're not going to be a contender this year. But they are quietly 8-6, just hanging out in that back half of the playoff picture. I think if the Spurs do make it to that top 8 in the West, it will be quite an accomplishment. But this is more contribution than they could have expected from Patty Mills, realistically, averaging better than 14 points per game.
What about Miami? I mean, last season's runner-up, they're struggling as they sit in 12th spot in the East, just the 5 wins from their 12 matches played. What's going wrong, do you think, with Miami, Phil, at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, it still is early in the NBA season. I think we should temper expectations with some of these teams. For example, the Oklahoma City Thunder are in action today, one of just 2 games on. They're 500 on the year. They've won as many as they've lost. That will not be the case come season's end. So there are some, we're still early enough in the year to say some of these are statistical anomalies, but it is a slightly abbreviated season. We are mathematically 1/6 of the way through it. I think there is reason for concern for the Heat. But you have to remember, last year before the bubble, they were the 5 seed in the East. It's not as though they were the best team in the East all season. It feels like they got hot at the right time. Mm. They had the right mesh of veteran leadership in Jimmy Butler and a lot of young, talented, eager guys, many of whom didn't have families on the outside of the bubble with whom they couldn't interact. So in terms of free-flowing basketball, they were kind of suited to perform well in the bubble. They maximized that in reaching the NBA Finals and then just ran into a LeBron James buzzsaw, as well as Anthony Davis. But I do think the Heat will right the ship. I did mention 4 contenders in the East, and the Heat were not an accidental omission. I do think they'll be similar to where they were last year, a 4, 5, or 6 seed. They'll be a pain in the butt in the playoffs. They'll win a series, and they'll push somebody after that. But I think if you look around the talent in the Eastern Conference, the Heat are just going to be a step behind some teams that are realistically going to contend.
We're going to follow it with great interest. Just a final one with Ben Simmons. Obviously, you know, so much interest back here in Australia, the 76ers, the situation there. Do you think they are trying to maybe move him on, or is this just trade rumours? I mean, it's been reported that Philadelphia were willing to swap Ben Simmons to Houston for James Harden. Can you give us your own insights, a little closer to the ground than we are?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think that was, if you look at the structure of the Sixers and you look at what James Harden offers, he was a perfect addition to that team. A perimeter threat, somebody who can create off the dribble, play a nice high-low screen game with Joel Embiid. That's not something necessarily that Ben Simmons offers. He's an incredible ball distributor, high basketball IQ, a great defensive player, but that team has all kinds of defense. I think they need to elevate their ceiling offensively. So when Harden demanded a trade and he listed Philly as an option, it was always going to be a package that included Ben Simmons. I talked to Tim Bontemps, who's one of our reporters who covers the Sixers, and he's like, listen, Ben hears these rumors. He understands it. And all of us were kind of surprised that Harden went to the Nets. Like I said, it made the Nets better at something that wasn't a weakness, and it exposed to them a weakness that they already had on the defensive side. So while it does make the Nets better, that trade, that Harden deal, it didn't seem to fit as well as it would have had Harden landed in Philadelphia. But here we sit. The Sixers are, you know, what, 9-5, right in the mix in the Eastern Conference. Joel Embiid is having an MVP-caliber season. He has been absolutely tremendous. And Ben Simmons is averaging, you know, darn near almost a triple-double, 12-9-9, as we talk here today. So his game hasn't gone anywhere. I think Doc Rivers and Daryl Morey, the front office changes that they've made, have made decent additions in the offseason. Doc Rivers is a great motivator.
Yep.
His issue has always been playoff basketball. But I do think the Sixers have established an identity. They know who they are, and that can get you pretty far in this league. So I think Simmons has enough maturity to understand the professional side of the situation, and I don't think that is what's going to impact their ability or lack thereof to contend for a title.
Well, hopefully he does certainly stay at Philadelphia. Phil, nice to catch up with you as always. Never a shortage of news coming out of the NBA. We'll talk soon.
Sounds great. We'll talk soon.
Phil Murphy from ESPN over in the US covering the NBA for us here on Afternoons.